Have you ever met one of those people who just can't be stopped? It's like they're unstoppable.
Yeah, I have.
Me too.
What's their mystique?
Nothing stops these people. Welcome to Mission Unstoppable with Coach Frankie Picasso. You're about to meet some of the most amazing people. They've accomplished their goals despite insurmountable odds. They beat adversity, physical hardship, and traumatic events, and emerged triumphantly. They're people just like you and me, and they're winners. Are you unstoppable? Here's Frankie to show you how.
Well, hello there, and welcome to Mission Unstoppable. Boy, it's been a couple of weeks, I think, since I've seen you guys. I saw you on Frankie Sense and More. But today I have an amazing guest. Her name is Audrey Birnbaum, and she is a gastroenterologist turned author whose book, American Wolf, From Nazi Refugee to American Spy, gained her an award as a finalist in the 73rd National Jewish Book Awards in the Holocaust Memoir category. So congratulations on that. This is an amazing book. And, you know, it's about as honest as a book gets. It's filled with tragedy and loss and moments of triumph, but it's a Holocaust survival tale and an immigrant story. And it's got a lot of truth to it. And I think it portrays a perfectly imperfect family. I can say that. As so many of ours are, with rich characters, like your grandmother, Greta. Wow, she's great. I love her. I loved her already. Just, it was a wonderful read. And it's such an easy book. It's a big book, but an easy book to read and very compelling. And I think that you made a great decision to become an author.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me on your show, Frankie. Really appreciate it.
No, it's great. You know, from one daughter to another of Holocaust survivors and wanting to write a father's memoir and write their, you know, their biography. It's something very special. And, you know, for us, it was special. For me, it was special. I'm sure for you, it was special to write his story. But for the family and the grandchildren to remember and get to know, you know, who was there, because we're gone so quickly. And that history is lost so fast, especially when you don't have a lot of family. Like, you know, we lost a lot of family in the war. And I think as you did as well. So how much did you know before your father passed and you started to think about writing his story? Like, did your father and your grandmother, did they talk about what happened in the past, or did they keep it to themselves a lot?
I don't think my grandmother ever talked about it. I did know my grandmother growing up till I was about 16, which was great, because then in describing her, it was very easy to conjure memories of her stern German qualities. Not that she wasn't a loving grandmother, she was, but yeah. She certainly had a certain style of doggedness that I think sort of helped the family escape. Absolutely. She was tenacious. That was the perfect word. They had grit. I think my father talked about it from the time we were really young. But I always describe it that he talked about it as if it was a great adventure. He didn't describe it as something that there was no emotional content to it in terms of like, this was so sad, I lost so many people, even though I found out after I read his notes just how tragic the losses were. But it was more like, can you believe it? We got out. We were the last boat out. It was so amazing. And I describe it as sort of, you know, sometimes when people survive something and they survive, you know, a car crash or a bear attack or something like that, they will describe it with that type of almost like the sort of adrenal rush of like, oh my God, can you believe it? So it was sort of almost like a point of pride, if I could put it that way, that he had survived this terrible thing in the sort of last moment. Because it really was he took the last boat out of continental Europe and one of the last trains to leave Berlin before mass transports went in the other direction east. So we were very much exposed to the Holocaust early on. We watched documentaries way before we should have, when it was, you know, the bodies piled up in mass graves, and I was maybe five that I could remember seeing it. So there was a lot of early exposure to it. Hitler speeches and, parades and things really, really young, because I think he was obsessed with it and wanted to see it. So we just, we had one TV, so we all
Interesting.
watched. So there was a lot of exposure. But then there was sort of this idea that we all knew it, and then we didn't need to talk about it anymore. And then when it was when my father passed away in 2018, and my sister and I were thinking, well, we're going to make a eulogy about him. And I said to my sister, I said, okay, well, I'll write it. I know the story. And I start telling her, okay, so we're going to write about the boat he took out of Spain. And my sister said, no, it was Portugal, right? And I said, well, oh, I think it was Spain. And she was like, no, Portugal, I'm sure of it. And we said, oh, we'll ask Dad. And
Yeah.
of course, that was the moment we realized that a lot of the details had faded. It had been years since we had spoken of it, and we really didn't know. But luckily, my father left us a treasure trove that we had completely forgotten. But years, or really a decade and a half before, he had written everything down from his memory, and 350 pages. So it was
That's amazing.
somewhere.
Yeah. And you put it
We
together
just had to
so
find it.
beautifully. Wow. It was amazing. Really. Such. I loved it. I really did. And I know it's your family's history, but I loved it anyway. I thought it was great. I loved all the
No,
characters.
the hard part for me was, again, well, first I had to stop working. That was the hard part. That was a whole obstacle. But to leave a career in medicine was a challenge, and I didn't do it to write the book. I did it for other personal reasons, just sort of reassessment of life values. It really actually did start with my father passing away, and then the same year my mother broke her hip and I broke my leg, and I was out of work for a couple months. And
Wow.
it took me 2 years after that to finally, make the decision to leave, which happened to correlate by pure coincidence with the pandemic coming. And so then all the things I thought I was going to do when I stopped working, I couldn't do. And so then by then I had discovered my father's notes, and I said, my mother was elbowing me. She's like, Dad wanted to publish his, she called it his book. And it was really like he bound it, and thought, this
Wow.
is his book. And he called it like my life struggles, like
Yeah.
the chronicle of my life struggles. And which is a little, I thought it sounded like Mein Kampf. And I
Yeah,
was like,
yeah.
I can't publish this
Chronicle of my life.
as is.
Yeah.
I mean, it could go to like a Holocaust museum, but it didn't read like a book. It read like a detailed family history.
And it
This
was
is
in
what
English or
happened.
German, the
It was
book.
in English. It was totally in English, and it was, but it was like, you could have it. You could have drawn a blueprint of his apartment. This is where the bathroom is. This is
Okay.
where my bedroom was. This
Very
is what the
strong.
kitchen looked like. This is what my mother used to do in the morning. And it was all wonderful material for me to work with,
Ah.
but it wasn't written like a story that you would want to read. And in fact, I hadn't really read it because it was so hard to get through. It was like too much detail and not particularly interesting until you got to the escape part. I mean, then it was actually quite riveting.
Yeah.
But I still had to figure out, how do I tell the story and give those details in the context of a story? How is that done? And I had never really done any creative writing before. I'd written chapters and journal articles and things like that, but so I could put the sentence together, but I didn't know how to write a book.
You did a great job, and I actually had gotten a writing partner because I wanted to take the emotion out of my writing, because the emotional part of writing about your family and your dad especially, it's difficult. How did you separate yourself, or did you, from the story that you were telling, or did you sit and cry all the way
I
through
cried through it almost the whole time. I didn't separate
it?
myself at all. I don't know what the rules are, how you're supposed to do it. And I didn't have a writing partner. I did it as a sort of solitary exercise, and with no discipline whatsoever, which is how I do everything. You're like, how does she practice medicine with no? No, I mean, I have some discipline, but when it came to writing, like, I felt I had to become immersed in the story visually to see it. And be able to, this was just my process, that I had to kind of be in the story and see it. I had to see the apartment, I had to see the town, I had to see the train. And
Did you go?
once I could, Excuse me?
You go to Germany? Did you go to Europe and go to those
So I've
places?
been, yeah. So I had been, I also took some German classes while I was writing it. I mean, I knew a little bit just from growing up. My father would speak to his mother in German, so I understood a little.
Yeah.
And then I went on Memrise, which is similar to Duolingo. It's you know, like a language
Yeah.
app. And then I took some classes and got to like some intermediate level, most of which I've forgotten. I had been to Berlin with my daughter after she graduated high school in maybe like 2017, and I had been back with my family quite a few times to Germany, both east and west. East being significant because my father had been
Yeah.
stationed there as a intelligence officer, which is part of the book, his return to Germany. So I had a sense. I mean, he had even taken us to where his apartment was. Yeah, I had a visual sense of what it looked like, but I still had to get back to 1930s Berlin,
Yes.
to swastikas hanging from the balconies, to parades. And again, some of it, I'd seen footage from very young, so I had a certain image of it. But I had to put myself in his shoes. And to that, I feel like okay, this is going to sound weird, but I feel like I sort of became him
You
in this
channeled
weird
that.
way. And it
Yeah.
was, okay, I'm
Let's call it
sorry,
that.
I was
Let's
getting
call it
emotional when I talk about it,
that.
but it was a weird connection after he had died to him, to the person that I didn't ever know, which
Yeah.
was the little boy who was traumatized,
Yeah.
who lost friends and family members and material things and his school and,
So
all of
desperately
those
wanted
things.
a friend, and then he came here, and he so desperately wanted to be an American, and
Yeah, all of those
oh,
things. And
yeah.
all of those things became, the man that I knew, which was a man who, on the one side, had a very whimsical side and a very loving side. And on the other side, had tremendous demons and was a very difficult man and a difficult husband and a difficult father that, I had made peace with, but I never understood the connection between that and all the fears he had accumulated from all these losses, none of which he had ever resolved, no therapy or anything.
Yeah.
He really was traumatized by the experience. And, I never knew whether, you could call somebody who wasn't in a camp a Holocaust survivor because, he
Yeah.
hadn't been in a concentration camp. And again, he never described his experience in that
Yeah.
way of devastation. He was also a child. And I'm sure his father, who was very, whimsical and upbeat in Germany, not here when he transitioned here, where he suffered from a lot of displacement and depression. But I'm sure he tried to keep up my father and be like, he probably said, "We're on a train. This is an adventure, because what else do you do to your 11-year-olds, but try to keep him in good spirits."
You mentioned, and I can't remember the whole, but it was called the Ulysses condition.
Yeah, Ulysses
What
syndrome.
is that exactly?
Yeah, so I learned that, this is part of like the research for the book. I had to do a lot of research to find family members that he didn't know the names of, find out what happened to them, because he said they disappeared and he never knew. But of course, I had internet access and the Holocaust database, so I found out who had been shot and where and when. So there a lot I could add to the book, which was also very sad, like what happened to his best
Oh,
friends,
sad.
who I found out, ended up in a camp. So each time I cried because I was crying for him.
Yeah.
But sorry,
That's okay.
never
That's
expect
okay.
this. Never know when it's going to
I
happen.
know. There's
But
something that's really.
sorry. It's all very real. Like, it always feels very recent
Yeah.
and current.
Not that long ago, your dad passed away either. So.
No, yeah. I mean, he passed away in 2015. Sorry, I just unplugged my light by accident.
No
And see
worries.
if I can get that back. And if not,
That's okay.
you'll see me in the darkness. So the you asked me a question about Ulysses syndrome. Yes. So my grandfather, who had been really the lighthearted one in the family compared to my stern grandmother, when they came to the US, everybody, like, they just started working right away. They came with $10 in their pocket and they knew, okay, we got to get jobs, but we speak no English, so it was menial work. So my grandfather took a job as a pot washer in the basement of Sydenham Hospital, which I think it became Harlem Hospital, or it was on 125th Street. And he worked in the basement, and then he worked nights as a busboy. And he never learned English, and he never made friends. And he became quite depressed. But sometimes he would have these like hints of what seemed like manic episodes. Like he'd be like, "I'm gonna open up my own clothing store, and I'm gonna, do, he would get excited about some dream, some idea." And it had been rumored that his father, Wolf Schwarzen, was my father's namesake, had had some kind of mental illness. And so they thought that his depression might be a sign of this, some inherited mental illness. But then I found in my work, in my research, that a lot of immigrants suffer from this thing that they classified in the psychiatric Bible, what they call a Bible called DSM, and I think we're up to DSM-5, which is like a categorization of mental health illnesses. Ulysses syndrome is a specific mental condition to people who are immigrants, and it happens because of language isolation and displacement and homesickness. It's a very specific kind of depression that happens to the immigrant from anywhere for any reason. And so he really kind of fit that category, and I think that's really what happened. And part of that was did not end up in a community of people who shared their language. Part of it's because my grandmother really did have some kind of a personality disorder. She was kind of a bit of a jealous woman, a judgy woman, and she kept breaking bonds with people. So they came here, they had some cousins, but she could keep breaking it off because she kept thinking like she was insulted, somebody insulted her. So she stopped talking to people. So the little bit of connections that they could have had, they lost. And I think that was tragic,
Yeah,
because they
like your
really.
grandfather took your dad. I remember in the book, your grandfather took your dad out to visit like a sister. I think they might have still been in Germany, family that your mother didn't approve or grandma didn't approve of. And so they would go secretly or, without her
Yes.
to visit, because family was, it meant a lot to him and not as much to her. I mean, even the people here that had helped her come here, she gave up that relationship because of whatever, the jealousy, like you said, or something happened.
Yeah, she was a little paranoid. She always imagined slights. She was just terribly insecure. That was really, at the heart of it, she was a terribly, terribly insecure woman, which I tried to. My father did not describe any of this. My father idolized his mother. She brought them to safety, and he never fully separated from her psychologically. So a lot of these observations were things that I made as an adult looking at this story, and I had to somehow weave these observations, which were my own, into the story that presumably my father was telling because it's a first person story. So I had to create like a characters. Based on, so this was sort of like a merging of my father's story and my adult observations that he never was make.
What
And
about
I
your
think that's
mom?
what made it
What did
real.
she make of her?
What did he make of
Well,
her?
your mother. What did your own mother make of her mother-in-law?
I think again that there was this attachment to her, like we moved into Flushing. And my father took over the apartment that he had lived with her. She moved around the corner. We talked about moving to a house. We never did. We never like moved away from her. And my mother's own mother was a little bit of a detached grandparent, who a little self-absorbed and not very present. So my grandmother Greta was very, she wasn't warm, but she was very dutiful. So if we needed a babysitter, my mother went back to work as a teacher, she would be there to babysit. She made us dresses when my parents didn't have a lot of money. She would, she was a wonderful dressmaker, so she helped dress us. So she was, there was a sort of dependency on her, but she wasn't, a lot of like Jewish People have
What's up,
their
Libby?
anxiety, you know, they're like, oh, I love you. Well, it never. I mean, not
My
a.
mother was like that too. She was actually from New York, my mom, and she had met my father in New York. But yeah, my mother was very much like your grandmother, like just back. Like there wasn't that
Yeah,
warmth.
I think it was a little bit
Loved
German.
her grandchildren. I knew that. Like,
Yes, she absolutely loved us.
yeah.
But, you know, we would go to her house for dinner. And I remember coming back and saying, my parents would say, well, how was it? And I would say, well, the portions were very small because everything was like meted out very carefully, which is how my house was too. And then my father told my grandmother that I had said this, and she was so insulted because imagine how insecure she was. And she had a cow, you know, that I had said this. I remember this vividly. You know, she was so angry and but of course so hurt that I had complained.
She was so afraid of not having, and she scrimped and saved her whole life so other people could have stuff. Right. I mean, when you look at the book and and your father, like all of a sudden there's $20,000 in the bank and we couldn't eat dinner like for the last 10 years, you know, but your grandmother
Yes.
was there. Your
And then, but
grandmother.
then he repeated that, you know, in his life, which was so amazing that I'm reading this in his notes about how upset he was that he had no food in his house, and then and realized that it was because they were all they did was save it and save it and save it, and then that's exactly the playbook he followed in my life.
But he didn't
So
see himself in that, which is
he
interesting,
could
right?
not see himself in that. No, not
Yeah,
at all.
that's funny. That is so funny.
Yeah.
My mom was like that too. I mean, at the end, she ate Jell-O. I'm like, you have money, eat. You know, but she would just buy Jell-O, and
But it's,
I'm
it
like,
will
shut up.
never be enough if you're afraid.
Yeah.
There does there's no amount of the money of money in the bank that will offer you security, especially when your own government has taken it from you.
That's right. I mean, that's the biggest thing, isn't it? The government took everything. And God bless your grandma, you know, when she sent that money or she sent the jewelry to Rotterdam, like that was brave to actually do that. But how amazing. Like, let's tell that story. So the war is it the writing's on the wall. The Jews are being persecuted. Everything, you know, the government's coming to take everything. And your grandmother had the insight to send some personal items away through the years,
Yeah,
right?
so some of it worked out and some of it didn't. They
Yeah.
sent their furnishings to Rotterdam. They sent them on lifts by train to Rotterdam with the hope that after the war they would be reunited with their furnishings. But they had tremendous pride in what little they had in their house. They had a couple of Persian carpets. I mean, they were very middle class. I think again in my father's writing there's a sense that they lived very fancy, but it really wasn't. I mean, I could see that it was very middle class, and but the pride they took is what made him feel that way. You know, little glass trinkets, a little silver that she polished, you know, every day so it
Yeah.
would shine. So they sent that away till their apartment was basically bare. All they had was beds, and which eventually they moved into the living room because they had no heat during the war, and they were all just sort of living in the living room like it was a hospital ward. But eventually, during the Allied bombings, Rotterdam was bombed to smithereens, so that furniture was gone. But then Germany, part of Germany's plan and Hitler's plan was to impoverish the Jews. And so, besides freezing their bank accounts, moving people into their apartments, and in some cases, they also called up and said everybody has to bring their jewelry. And there were some Dutch Red Cross workers who were unbelievable. And the risks that people took is it's heartwarming because, of course, you hear the other side too, people turning people in. But a lot of people did a lot. And the Dutch were very, very helpful. And a Red Cross worker told my grandmother's, see, I said my mother because I do make that mistake. My grandmother's cousin, that she would take her jewelry and give it to somebody else and give it to somebody else and give it to somebody else in Holland, and there'd be a code name to remember. And I don't know what it is, so I couldn't write it. And if they ever made it to America, they'd publish an ad somewhere, and if they saw that code name, they could get their jewelry back. And
Amazing.
it was not till 1946 that my grandmother was reading this journal called the Aufbau, which was like it was really for scattered refugees, a German language newspaper. And in the back, they saw an ad, you know, that you know, sort of very something very vague, like contact us with the code name. And they met in like a deli in Manhattan. And this Dutch woman came and said, "I'm so sorry it took so long, but my father died and he had all this jewelry buried in his backyard. And we had to dig up the whole backyard to find who it belonged to."
Incredible.
And my mother to this day wears a diamond ring that was one of those things. I mean, it wasn't much. It was like a brooch, a watch chain. So maybe it was five things, but it was I mean, they were
Things.
overwhelmed, you know, because they hadn't they came with not they came with some photographs,
Yeah.
which are in the book, some linens, which they valued, and a few, two pairs of pants. You know, I mean, it was really nothing.
Yeah. Wow. What a story. What a story. It's
Well, the
incredible.
hardest thing I think was the visa thing. That was, I mean, to me, the one of the biggest one of the reasons I wrote
Oh,
this story were
yeah,
two
heart
things.
pounding.
One, that they were the boat that they were on was basically like a concentration camp, and it was the last boat, and it was a boat from hell. And not a lot's been written about that. And the other was the bureaucratic delays in getting out, which almost, you know, led them to have to sit through the war and be bombed. That almost really led to their demise, were intentional. And my father, to his dying day, did not know how complicit America was in making this slowdown and telling the consulates, delay, delay, postpone, postpone, do everything you can. So my father just thought, and my grandmother thought, they had terrible luck. What terrible luck. We went there. And first they said, "You're on the Polish visa," even though they were German, because of where my grandparents were born in Prussia, and I went to Poland. And then they said, "Oh, we're so sorry. We can only give you three visas, not four." So they had to figure out what to do with my father's sister, which is a whole other story. You'll read
So amazing.
the book and you'll find out
What
what
an
that is.
amazing story that they all met up again. Thank God. Like,
That
wow.
was unusual. A lot of families got separated forever.
Yes.
And then they said, "Oh, you have a health problem. My grandfather had a hernia. Figure that out in the middle of a war."
Yeah.
And then they said, "Oh, we lost all your paperwork. You have to now apply, basically apply again." So it took them almost 5 years to
Yeah,
finally get a visa.
like
And
roulette.
then by the time they got to Spain, their visa expired. And it took again bravery and courage from some people to they could not board a ship without a valid visa to the US. So I won't give away how
Yeah.
they managed to board a ship, but it was really, you know, they knew that if they didn't get on a ship, they were going to end up in a camp. I mean, at that point. So it was a harrowing period, you know, very frightening. By then, my father, you know, he wasn't excited anymore. He
Yeah.
was right. You know, he could see the fear in his parents. So.
It was so interesting, though, that your father, he wanted to be an American. He wanted to belong. He wanted to play with kids. I mean, he was a kid. He got there, he was still a kid. And then, unbelievable that the draft comes and he's going back. He's going back to Germany and he's joined, the American, and they guilted him into joining. But he, almost guilted him into
They
joining.
did
Don't
guilt
you
him.
want to, yeah, like, don't you want to, help the
Don't
country?
you owe your country
Don't you owe
that
your country?
saved you?
Yeah, okay, thanks so much for that. And so he goes back as an intelligence officer because he's natural speaking German, which is so interesting, really. But I could just imagine, I mean, there's probably a part of him that goes, oh yeah, I can't wait to go see my old home and my friends and blah, blah, blah. But then the other part is like, I just had friends blow up. Like, I just had my best friends die in a war that wasn't a war, in a war that wasn't supposed to even be a war. And now he's going back to, a country that he escaped from. Like, how many times can you escape and be lucky, right? And now he's going back there.
Yeah, I mean, his whole family was homesick,
Yeah.
and they found America so like loud and brassy compared to what they had come from, and so they were homesick. And he was really excited to go back. And then the minute he stepped foot on German soil, he suddenly became overwhelmed with this fear that everybody was anti-Semitic and everybody was a Nazi. And the only thing that made him feel safe was his uniform, his U.S. uniform that stated, "I am an American," as opposed to, "I am a Jew," was his armor against
Actually, that's what I was
perceived
going to ask you
anti-Semitism.
about the Jewishness, because, like, my father didn't grow up, he was Jewish, but he didn't grow up Jewish. he missed his bar mitzvah because he was walking across Europe. And when he got here, he was like, kind of, eh, you know, I'm Jewish, but, and even though all these people had died because of they were Jewish, he still kind of wasn't, he didn't deny being Jewish, but he also didn't embrace it. I don't think until he had a wife who said, yo, we're gonna, you know, build a temple, we're gonna do this, we're gonna do that. So you said that your father's family wasn't that Jewish either. Were you raised very Jewish? Like, were you raised in the temple and going?
No, not at all. I mean, I think, you know, look, everybody reacted differently who was through this in terms of
Okay.
how they saw religion. I think we were, there's a term for people who only celebrate holidays, you know, holiday, I don't know what I forget the term.
Yeah.
There was an, you know, awareness culturally of our Jewishness. We didn't belong to a temple.
Cost money.
Part of that was living in Queens. Like we were living in a not particularly Jewish neighborhood. There was no particular, it's not like, you know, the suburbs where you have your neighbor, everybody belongs. My
Yeah.
parents kind of avoided that whole lifestyle. So you could sort of get away with not belonging. And my grandmother still went, and sometimes took me with her, but for the most part, pretty non-observant. And then my father would say things like, I think Israel's so important, you know, because as a place of refuge. But then my parents, who were very well traveled, never went. And they would say, oh, it's too hot, you know. But I feel like there was something like, you know, they went to Peru. Like, why not Israel? You know, they went to Korea. I mean, you know, Singapore was hot. They went there. So I feel like there was somehow something
They felt guilt,
psychological
a
about
guilt or
going
something about going. My dad went
something.
once, but he didn't like it. He didn't like it. And he still, like, he did stuff because his wife wanted him to do stuff with the temple, but he wasn't really into it, I don't think.
I feel like there was a discomfort as fully identifying as Jewish that kept him out of there. I think that's what it was. Like, it was like too, it's like too brazen to go and say, I am a Jewish, when that was such a source of negative of negative things for him, both in Germany, but also when he got here. When he got here, people were anti-Semitic and they were anti-German. And then the Jews didn't even like the German Jews, you know, the Eastern Jews. So like nothing was good. There was nothing good about being Jewish for
Wasn't
him, or
part of
he'd want to
that.
advertise it, you know. So I feel like if I had to guess, and I can't know for sure, I would say subconsciously, there was a little bit of that. It's like it was very important to have Israel for everybody else, you know.
Exactly. All those other poor Jews who needed it.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I get that. I get that. I remember, being 12 years old and being in a synagogue, and I turned to my dad and said, I don't want to come back. I don't like it. I just felt like people were there to show off. And I said, I feel more in communion with God in a cornfield than I do in this place. And I never went back. And that was it, But I understood. But still, when I had children, and my husband wasn't Jewish, but still, when I had children, I said, you can't deny that Jewish part of you, because our whole family was desecrated in the camps. Like, there's only three survivors out of, like eight brothers and sisters or whatever. Like, you have to not deny it, but you don't have to practice it. And that's kind of a thing, but yeah, it's interesting. It's
Yeah,
interesting.
and well, you know, it's a whole other conversation for another day about what happens to the next generation that didn't really grow up with the stories and are more removed, and how that informs their politics and their sense of urgency, their sense of fear, political fear. You know, it's not going to be the same, because I think that I grew up with a sense of foreboding always. I think it couldn't, you know, again, it could be on my DNA, you know, could you could, you know, see if I have epigenetics of intergenerational trauma, or it could be the way I was raised, but there's, you know, there's always that sense of like the shoe could drop. You
Well,
know.
interesting enough, my aunt, just before COVID, she's living in Salzburg, wrote, said, the anti-Semitism is growing so much, we want to leave. I go, your husband's 106 years old, you want to leave now? And she goes, it just feels like it did before Hitler. She goes, that's what it feels like. that temperature is rising. And that was very scary for them, because obviously they remembered it well. So I can't even
This
imagine.
was I did a book talk at my temple a couple of nights ago, and that was a very big part of people's conversation. Is like, because for my family in the book, there's a lot of conversation about knowing when it was time to leave and my family being late on picking up on it. That a lot of people, things started to decline between 1934 and 1935. People lost their jobs, so they left because they had no means of income if you were a civil servant. And my grandfather worked in a store, and you could still be a business owner, so he didn't leave. And then the Nuremberg laws were a big thing. They codified anti-Semitism into law, and a lot of people said, now's the time, and they left. And my grandfather's boss, who was the store owner, he sold them the store, and they said, this is an opportunity, so they stayed. And it was right around 1936 that the anti-Semitism kind of quieted down because of the Olympics coming, and so there was sort of a lull, and things seemed, 36 was a very, very good year, so they thought they were doing really well. It was like their best year ever. And so they stayed, but a lot of people really left then. And then by 37 they knew, holy mackerel, just now everything's really kicking up. And by then everybody was putting in their applications, and it was really too late at that point. So it's like the knowing when you it's time to leave, and then where you're going to go that it's better than America, or you're in Canada. Where, yeah,
A
we're
lot
in
of people
Canada.
went to obviously to South America and different places wherever they could get in, but my dad went to England. His family went to New York. But the rest of them went there. But yeah, it's where do you go? Well, and nobody wanted to let you in anyway. That was the problem. Just like today.
Yeah.
Not welcome in a lot of places. And they've always been, they're tenacious, I guess is the word for them too, because they tend to move but stick around. It's interesting. It's interesting what. I can't put a, my husband asked me once, why do people hate you guys so much? I go, I don't know. You have to ask yourself that or ask other people that. I have no idea. Because I don't understand it really. Was it Shakespeare? Like in my mind, it was Shakespeare writing about, a money lender. I don't know. Like
I think it goes back further than
yeah, it
that.
probably does. But it's kind of an interesting thing. Like why? But here we are today. Now we have a renewed sense of with the Gaza and all that. Of people targeting Jews again, and it's unfortunate and scary
Just
to watch.
rises to fear is always there, and it just rises to the surface when it's allowed, it's always sort of there, and we should. That's what we should never forget. I always feel like, when people say never forget, like the Holocaust should never happen again. But the thing we've learned from history that, whether it's a pogrom or whether it's the Spanish Inquisition or whether it's a Roman expulsion, that there will be an again and again and again. And that's what we should never forget, is don't get too comfortable. I'm sorry to be so negative,
Oh, it's
but don't
true.
get too comfortable. Know who your real friends are. Be prepared. And don't live your life like every day like that. Maybe don't get so comfortable. Don't assume that it can't happen, because history tells us otherwise, and all of history tells us otherwise. History tells us there'll be war again. History tells us that humans are humans. That's and I don't mean that in a negative way. I just pragmatic.
Like last year I was in Berlin and I went to the camp and I almost I couldn't go. I got physically ill being there. And but when I was in Budapest and you see the boots on the ground by the river and it's like again it makes you sick to your stomach and anybody how anybody can go and see that and not feel ill is beyond me. But my husband comes from a Mormon and the Mormons are always about end of days too, or people coming to get them because they came after them when they were in Utah. And so they
That's
always
right, yeah.
have a 2-year supply of everything in their basement. And like sometimes I'll see him come home with tons of stuff. I go, what are you doing? Like, we don't need all, but he grew up that way. They always had 2-year supply, in case they had a hole up with their guns and were coming after them. And
Nothing
all
wrong with
different
being a
kinds of
little
groups of people.
prepared. Yeah. I mean, it's
prepared
not
and
bad to be a little bit prepared while not living, but still living a joyous, happy life as one should.
can you?
Can you? I think
Moral.
so.
No, I
Yeah.
think you can live a joy. I'm the opposite of that spectrum where I'm probably not prepared enough. I just believe I'm hope. I guess I believe in when I expect people to be a certain way, they are a certain way. And he expects the negative. I always expect the positive. But I think
Yeah,
the
maybe
outcome is that
opposites attract and you make a great match.
maybe it just levels out somewhere. Who knows? Who knows? But Audrey, what a fascinating book you wrote, and what a beautiful family you have. And what did your children think? Did they read it? Were you?
Yeah, well, two out of three read it. My youngest, he's just out of college. He hasn't gotten to it yet. And I'm not pushing him. But my daughter's a big reader. She really loved it. My middle son, who he's 25-year-old boy, he was just turned 26. He wasn't much of a reader either.
Yeah, I'm not too.
But he read it and he couldn't put it down. He read it over a couple of days straight and he really loved it. I mean, a lot of people, like, the feedback that I get is that they can't put it down. They just keep wanting to know, like, what
Wonderful book.
happened next.
Yeah.
And it does have that feeling of that sense of, like, will they get out? Will they make it? What happens next? Will he succeed even when he comes here? So I'm thrilled that that's the feeling people get. I was worried when I wrote it that after they got here, that people wouldn't want to read on about what happened to my dad, that they'd be like, okay, well, he made it out of Germany, that's it. But
Yeah,
that doesn't seem
about
to
man, I'm
be,
sorry.
they seem to be attached to him as a character and still want to know what happens next. And a lot happens to him
He had
after he gets
personality,
here.
your dad. He really was. He was a personality, and he was funny. And just his thinking about him going to back to Germany and the antics and the car chase and being a intelligence officer and the women and coming becoming a man. Really, it's funny. It's fun.
Yeah, no, it's all true. I think the
Get this
humor's
sense from him.
of mine, but not that he wasn't a funny man, but he didn't re he necessarily write his stuff humorously, but it wasn't hard for I but I saw the humor in his predicaments, and it was sometimes I would just people say, well, describe the book, and I would say, well, it's Europa meets Portnoy's Complaint, like it was like it's somehow like that was how I saw it, like sort of the series of like it's a serious topic, but it's a lot of like wild stories put
Yeah.
together, plus that sort of personal coming of age story at the same time. So that's kind of how I
Amidst
saw
a
it.
war and all kinds of crazy things. And it's interesting, last weekend I saw the movie Cabrini. I don't know if you heard about it. And another Italian immigrants coming in to New York and how
Yeah.
everybody hated them, just hated them.
Oh,
And
yeah.
then it was the Jews and it's like these waves in the Polish, and they just hate everybody in a wave, and then that's done, and then you're gonna hate the next wave that comes in, and it's crazy, what it is. And you see it at the wall. Oh, we hate those people, immigrant. Everybody was an immigrant here. Everybody. It wasn't one.
Yeah, it takes a while. We like to categorize people and put them in boxes, and the acceptance takes a while. It takes until the next generation.
And it was interesting when I was in Germany, the young people, we were talking to some young people, and they were apologizing for being German, almost like apologizing for what their relatives had done or what their parents or grandparents had done. And I felt so bad for them in a way, because they also have to overcome what people were thinking of. Well, how could the Germans do this? Like, such horrible things they did, right? And I felt for them, because it's not their sin. It's not theirs to own, really.
No, I think Germany does a great job in educating
Yeah.
students about the Holocaust, which is great. We in this country have no uniform Holocaust curriculum of any kind, and there's quite a few states that have no curriculum at all. And even in New York, I think they finally in 21 passed legislation that said we should have a curriculum. That was the big legislation. We
Yeah.
should have one, but we don't. So it's kind of catch as catch can. I was hoping the book I could get the book into schools. I'm doing a couple of school talks.
Yeah. Is it the library though? Is it Library of Congress? It went through as a publisher.
It did go through, yes, it is in the Library of Congress and the World Library and somewhere in Amsterdam, in The Hague. I think there's like a World Library. But for it to be like part of a school library, I don't know how that works. I haven't figured that out yet. But I think like it could be a young adult book.
Oh, absolutely.
Because just because the age of my father going through it.
And it should be required reading almost, really. I
From
think
your mouth to God's ears.
there you go. Yeah. Frankie will put it out there. Because kids do need to know. They need to know everything. They glamorize war. You see these programs right now, the flyers and the this and the that. Like, my husband loves these programs, and I look at it like, this is not glamorous. This people died. Like, people, this was not, the guys are going off thinking, wow, I've just got this great uniform and everything's gonna be wonderful. And yet, like Hamburger Hill, right? They just become meat and it's horrible.
War is chaos
Earth is
and
chaos.
hell, yeah.
It's not glamorous. And I don't know why they idolize it. And all the movies about it is crazy. They glamorize it. I don't know. I don't think it's something, I think it's something we want to avoid, not do, but there's money. Where money is that's where people want to be, I guess, unfortunately. Well, I hope that I pray that my grandchildren never have to attend go to war, and I really hope that my children never experience it either. We were fortunate. I mean, I was born in 57. Knock on wood, we were the generation. We've been so lucky,
We've been so
so
lucky.
lucky.
We have been. And yeah, knock on wood, like for my children too. I don't worry for myself. I do worry for my kids. But all I can say is fingers crossed. What can I say?
Yeah, that's all you can
What
do,
can I say?
right? I hope those of you who are listening, will definitely go and get this book, American Wolf. It's Amazon, I'm sure, Barnes and Noble, all the usual.
Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Walmart, and any local bookseller can order it.
A fascinating read, and I highly encourage you to get this book and read it. It's beautiful, and you won't be able to put it down. I promise you that. You will not be able to put it down. It was great. What's on your agenda next? What are you going to write about now?
So I started writing a book. I paused a little bit just because I'm so busy marketing this, but I started writing a book that's purely a novel. Because now I think I know how to do it. I think I figured it out. And I think I'm good with humor. So it has a humorous tone to it. But it's about a group of hikers on a hiking trip in Croatia, and they come from all different like classes and ages and social backgrounds, and they've come together to be on this trip. And it's a clash of cultures. It's funny. It has a little bit of adventure in it, little romance, a little bit of everything. It's an ensemble cast. So I am in the middle of it,
Oh,
and I
wow.
can't wait to finish it eventually.
I like to read it. It reminds me of when my son did the trip through the way, in Spain. He walked that in all the different cultures that he met. He didn't speak a word of anything other than English.
Oh, how fun. That
And he
sounds
forgot his
great.
maps. He forgot everything. And that's him, because he's just like, forgetful. But he made it through all those kilometers, and he grew up, and it was great. It
It's
was
what an
great.
experience. That's great.
Yeah, just a different kid came home. It was amazing. So yeah, I encourage all parents, let your kids fly. And I can't wait to read that book, Audrey. I'm excited about it.
Well, then I better get to it.
You better get to it. Writing's not easy, but it's fun.
I love it. I really enjoy that physical act of writing it. I think it's the only time my brain is calm.
Don't miss medicine.
I really enjoy patient care, and my relationships with long-term relationships with patients, because I had a lot of chronic illness. It was pediatric GI, so loved, taking care of kids from young to old. But there's so much more to medicine now. There's a lot of business side to it that I'd rather not deal with. And yeah, I was getting kind of corporate, and I don't miss that at all. And I had a lot of other sides to me, and this was interesting. I found my sixth grade graduation, you know, those books where people write, you know, roses or violets or blue. I was back in 1970 something, and I had to write down like favorite TV show on the back, like you fill in these things. And I wrote like career goal, and it actually said writer. And I looked at it and I said, no way, that's impossible. How could I really never thought that I ever wanted to be in six, I mean, I was like 11. So I thought, well, that's, you know, maybe this was meant to be
Yeah,
somehow,
it's
you know.
interesting. Like that's where all those things come from. You know, I'm professionally, I was a coach, but all of those things, like I wanted to be a writer, I wanted to be on the radio, I wanted to, like I always wanted to do lots of stuff. And later in life, and an artist, and later in life, after I was 50, all of those things came true. And it was like, wow, look at that. Took
I
all.
know, like you wouldn't think you'd have time to for something else, but it is, you know, now I'm thinking medicine was my hobby and writing is actually
It was your
that's
rehearsal, your
my
dress rehearsal for life. Good
hobby.
for
Exactly.
you.
That's how I could meet all these people and learn about human nature and stuff. It was just practice.
Yeah, now you got characters. Thank you. Okay, goodbye, Facebook.
You
Say
so
goodbye.
much.
And I'm just gonna come off Facebook. And yeah, I think we're done there. Thank you.